Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
All right. We'll do a book now, which we don't do that often, but we're going to do one. And I've already heard from like three people today, and I know Mons gets inundated. People say, wait a second, we asked to come on. And the problem is I'll only do a book if I read it. And I have to want to be interested in the book. Otherwise, I don't do it. So this book I actually read before he even asked to come on. I had already read the book, so I saw it in the store. They didn't even send it to me. This book, usually they send me, as Mons will tell you, they send us every book in the world. This publisher, who was the publisher, Mons? I don't even know who it is. Ask him who it is. Write it down. What I'm saying, you can just tell me what the publisher is. Does Mons have a copy of the book there? I figured he did. You know, I figured he did. So, because I don't have it in front of me, I have it upstairs. So the bottom line is, I saw the book in a bookstore, and I said, wow, you know, this would be an interesting theme with the three guys. I didn't even know they were doing the book. I didn't know that Bob was doing a book. Bob's not someone who's a regular on this show. But the book was really good. I recommended it. Grand Central Publishing. There you go. There you go. There's the publisher. So Grand Central Publishing didn't even send us the book. There's a lot of the publishers that automatically send us every sports book. So never saw it. Wasn't aware of it. Saw it in a bookstore in the Barnes & Noble when I was in getting the kids' books for Christmas, and said, you know what, hey, this will be a fascinating time because the three coaches, how much they dominated, and also their stories, which were very interesting. And having lived that time as I did, and there was a lot of – and we were in the middle of this a lot. I mean, let's be honest. They all used their guys. I mean, Bill had his guys, of which I was one. George Young had his guys, of which Glauber and Dogg were both George Young guys. So as an example, I mean, George used both of them among each of them having other guys, but those were their guys. So everyone had their own guys. They sent out information. So it was a fascinating time. So, and the three coaches had so much success. So the book is called Guts and Genius, about the three coaches. If you want to go back and relive the 80s, which I know now isn't 20 minutes ago, but it was a great time. It left a big mark on the league. The Parcells tree has been very successful. You can see it there this weekend with Belichick and with Peyton. The Walsh Holmgren tree has been incredibly successful. You can see that all over the league. And is on display again this weekend with an Andy Reid as an example. And, of course, Andy's disciples who have now become their own little tree in their own right, their own little branch. So it's a very good book, and Bob joins us now. Bob, what's going on?
Mike, I'm doing great. How are you? Thanks for having me. It was a great time. It really was a great time.
It was, and, you know, and to be fair, as George, you know, I don't know if it's done as much now. Maybe it still is. I'm not in the middle of it as much as I was. But let's be honest. These guys, every coach had their guys, and GM had their guys, and they got their message out. And, you know, we all know who – we all kind of knew who everybody's guy was. And it's funny because they all played the game. And I don't know, maybe they're not as good at playing the game now. I don't know if they are, to be honest with you.
I don't know that there's the kind of contact that we had with Bill. And, like, I was very close to George, but I was really also close to Bill, and obviously closer now to Bill. We talk all the time.
Well, it'd be hard to be close to George now, but you were a George guy in those days.
No,
you were definitely a George guy.
Well, I mean a George guy.
George had a message, he had certain guys he would send his message out through, which we knew.
Yeah,
just like, you know.
But I wasn't like saying, "Hey George, you know, what do you want to get out there?"
I'll no,
get
but I'm saying, but
you,
if he had something to send out, they used the media to send messages. Yeah. They all did. Everybody did. And listen, Bill had multiple guys, as people know, he had more than one guy. As hey, look at the you tell the story in there, which is a true story about Bill Fraley, and I'll let you tell it now, Schnellenberger.
Yeah,
and how Bill thwarted George by using Jimmy the Greek. And remember, I was working for Jimmy the Greek at the time. I was working the NFL Today. I know that story on both ends to be true.
Yeah, back then, you know, Bill is 3-12-1 his first year, and George Young is Coles Howard Schnellenberger looking to see if he will come aboard to coach the Giants. So basically, by the end of that 83 season, everyone had decided Bill Parcells needed to be fired. George Young, Wellington Mara, Tim Mara. Now, they weren't talking at the time, but they all decided, you know what, it's too big for him. He can't handle this. He had, you know, his parents died within 7 months of one another. He had a coach who died.
Yeah, assistants who was sick, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
And it was crazy. So George calls Schnellenberger looking to, you know, see if he'll come aboard. He can't do it, but who is Schnellenberger's agent? It's Robert Fraley.
Correct.
Who is Bill's agent?
Yep.
And Robert Fraley's got to tell Bill, listen, I have to tell you this. George came calling about Howard Schnellenberger. So Bill obviously was upset about it, never forgot about it, and really always kind of held that in the back of his mind with George. And, the thing that Parcells told me about George, they didn't get along, you know, in terms of employer-employee, but they were very like-minded football-wise. They all believed in the same thing. Got to have big people.
Big was
better.
Big
is better, right? Yep. Got to run the ball. You got to play great defense.
And big is
their
better.
Their philosophy was aligned perfectly. Yep.
It really
and they
was.
Got along that way, yeah.
And they understood years later. And it's no secret George didn't want him back. We know that. You tell that story, too. It's no secret. I won't tell all the parts of that story because I was intricately involved in that, but he didn't want him back. The bottom line is, but it's funny, the thread with the three that you hearken with each guy, the slights that they get early in their career carry through their entire career. They don't get over them. Bill didn't get over the slight from Dick Lynch. He didn't get over the slight from Dick Bonacani. Walsh never got over the slight from Paul Brown. I mean, they don't get over slights early in their career. It's something that stays in their consciousness their entire and actually drives them their whole careers.
Mm-hmm. It really does, Mike. And the thing that I found fascinating with all three, there was a brilliance about them, and they all knew football very well, and they stuck to their principles, but there was also a really deep-seated insecurity about whether they could get it done.
I think all great coaches are insecure. Two things, insecure and very negative, extremely negative.
Yeah. It really drove Walsh out of the game because he was, Mike, he was ready to quit multiple times with the 49ers. Within 13 months after winning his first Super Bowl, he called Mike White in his hotel room. Mike White was former assistant coach. He called him in his hotel room at the Hula Bowl and said, he said, "Mike, I can't do this anymore. I couldn't get to the playoffs in the strike year. I want you to coach my team." And Mike White tells me, like, he couldn't believe what he was hearing. He said, "Bill, you can't do this. You have to coach. This doesn't work without you as the coach." He wanted to be the general manager and let Mike White coach his team. And Mike White talked him in off the ledge. Talked about 40 minutes and finally convinced Billy had to do it. I mean, he won the Super Bowl with a team who had gone 2-14, and they won it 3 years later. And then a year later, he doesn't get to the playoffs because of the strike. The strike year, and he's so disconsolate and so dejected, he's ready to quit. And it happened multiple times during his run with the 49ers. He coached 10 years, and by that 10th year, he was a burned out husk. He was done. And he just couldn't go on any further. He regretted it, leaving, you know, after 10 years, because George Seifert won with his team the following year. But he was kind of haunted. Bill Walsh had a personality that was really difficult for him to deal with. You know, as a child, he did not get along with his father. There's some harrowing incidents that Bill's son Craig told me about.
Oh, you got to tell the rabbit story. You got to tell the duck story.
Yeah,
you got to tell it. Go ahead, tell it.
It's unbelievable, Mike. Yeah. So Bill Walsh is about 10, 11 years old in Los Angeles. His father father and mother are, you know, bringing him up in Los Angeles. Father works on cars. You know, it's kind of a blue-collar existence. And Bill had this pet duck. They gave him this pet duck that he loved, and he tended to it every day. He'd come home from school, he'd tend to the duck, feed it, pet it. One day, he comes home, and the duck is not there. And he goes to his mother, "Where's the duck?" And she won't say anything. And he goes to his father, "Where's the duck?" And he just can't find the duck. Goes inside, and he smells dinner being cooked. And it's the duck.
That's like out of a horror movie. It's out of a horror movie. It really
right?
is. Yeah.
And now Craig Walsh, Bill's son, who was invaluable in talking to for this book, Craig Walsh tells me, he says, right then and there, this is what his father had told him many years later. He says, right then and there, he's only a kid, but right then and there, something hardened in him. Something changed his personality. And he said, I can't do it. These people are not here to help me. He referred to them as these people, his parents. So he kind of knew early on that he had to be very independent. He was a very lonely child.
And it's fascinating how they all are melded and how much, you know, he looked up to Paul Brown. Paul Brown's the god, the father of modern football. And when Paul Brown passes him over, he is devastated and wants to outdo Paul Brown his whole life because of that. I mean, he was devastated by Paul Brown.
What Paul Brown did unwittingly was unleashed the greatest coaching tree in the history of not only football, I think in pro sports, because you can't find a lineage greater than the one that Bill Walsh started with all the coaches that have coached under him. There are multiple Super Bowls. They're still winning Super Bowls off of the Bill Walsh coaching tree. And what happened there, Mike, when he got passed over by Paul Brown, was devastated. He went to, again, Mike White. He went to Mike White's house alone. He just hung out there for days at a time, figuring out what he was going to do. He was devastated, but he promised himself that if he ever got a head coaching job, ever, he would never treat his assistant coaches like Paul Brown treated him, because he felt that he was going to get that job. And Bill Walsh would have been perfectly content spending the rest of his career as the head coach of the Bengals. How'd you like to be a Bengals fan here?
He loved Cincinnati.
He loved it.
He loved it.
Loved it. Yep. So he didn't get that job, but he promised himself, I'm going to help coaches. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to help coaches. And, man, did he help them. He helped them at every turn. Even when he was not the coach of the 49ers, he was the president at the time, and there was a running back in there named Anthony Lynn, who played under George Seifert. He goes up to Lynn in the locker room. He says, "Hey, I think you can coach." And Anthony Lynn says, "Oh, wow. So Anthony Lynn right now is in the divisional playoffs coaching the San Diego Chargers. Bill Walsh could find coaches and see greatness in coaches even before they knew it. Anthony Lynn had no idea that he would, you know, end up being a coach. But Bill Walsh saw personalities and saw would-be coaches before they even knew it. And he was bound and determined to do whatever he could to help those coaches. And it's turned into this magnificent coaching tree. And it really started when Paul Brown passed him over. He was devastated. He never thought he'd get another chance.
And Parcells is the same way. He has helped every coach his whole life. He loves coaches. He hates if people not coaches. He has protected a million coaches. Now, not to be that he wasn't hard on his assistants, he was incredibly hard on his assistants. Could be vicious on them. But he has built an incredible tree, too. And Gibbs is a little different. And, you know, Gibbs for a second, because let's get to Gibbs, because the audience knows Parcells. Gibbs, and we're talking about Bob Glauber, his book is called Guts and Genius. It's a very interesting book about the three coaches, their relationships, all the Super Bowls they won, the battles among the three. And Bill has incredible respect for Joe Gibbs. And he beat him like a rented mule. He beat him 9 out of 10 times at one point. I mean, so, and a lot of them close games. But the funny thing is, I'll tell you, Bob, that Gibbs, who I knew second of the three, I only spent one time in my life with Walsh, and that was with Dick Vermeil, who was always been a long-time friend of mine. And he was very close to Walsh. And that's the only time I ever spent any time with Walsh. Didn't know him. Gibbs I knew better. Parcells I knew incredibly well. But the thing about Gibbs was, I think he was the best scrambler of the bunch, where he could take the uneven season and win, because it showed he won twice in strike years, and he won with three different quarterbacks. I think he was better at taking the
team that was in chaos and win more than the other two, probably.
I agree with you. And I think just in terms of pure coaching, you could make the argument that Joe Gibbs was the greatest coach of all time in the NFL because of how he did it. Now, the strike years, I asked him that, you know, did winning it in the non-strike year, the third one, did that vindicate anything for you? He said, no. No, because he took pride in keeping those teams together during both strikes, 82 and 87. They won Super Bowls, and it was really no accident because those teams stayed together. But Joe Gibbs could take a team with somewhat limited talent. Now, his defenses were always great, and he had the great offensive lines. But he won with three different quarterbacks, none of whom were close to Hall of Fame caliber, and he found a way to do it. So I think just in terms of strategy, just in terms of resourcefulness with the players he had with him, Gibbs, you could argue that he was the best. Because let's face it, you know, Walsh had one of the great iconic quarterbacks of all time, and Bill had a great defense. He had the best defensive player of all time. He had Sims, and then he had Hostetler, who really caught lightning in a bottle. And Parcells is one of the few multi-Super Bowl winners with different quarterbacks, and that's really hard to do. And that 90 season was incredible. You remember it.
That was a good team that played great. That's how I would describe them. They had the fewest turnovers of all time, and they needed Anderson, which George didn't want to give him, which he had to go to Tim Arra to get Anderson and got him. And Tim said, you better win me a Super Bowl. And Bill wanted Anderson, and that made a big difference. And they really, before the Bear game, after Phil breaks his foot, really remodel a team and go to that three tight end look and come out in a Bear playoff game with the three tight end look and really just change the way they played.
Yeah. It was amazing how difficult that challenge was. But you know what, Mike? Bill loved challenges. I think that's the thing that got him going the most. When you told him it couldn't be done, he says, hey, screw that. I'm going to find a way to get it done. You know, Mickey Corcoran, his old high school basketball coach, instilled that in him. Mickey always said, you got to figure out the plan. There is always a plan, and you got to figure it out. That's your responsibility. And Mickey gave that to him, and Bill loved it. Bill loved the challenge of beating the Bears. It was a great game. And then, you know, eventually they faced the 49ers out in San Francisco. It's Jeff Hostetler against Joe Montana. I remember thinking, there's just no way. There's no way. It's not going to happen. Nice run, but okay, here we go. And then he just found a way, and Belichick did a masterful defensive plan there. And they ran the ball, and Hostetler played mistake-free football, and Matt Barr, some of the most clutch kicking you'll ever see. They won that game 15-13. Yep. You know, before that game, Mike, 3 days before that game, Parcells shows up in the locker room and he's giving a speech to the team. He brings a suitcase in the team meeting room. Players are going, you know, what's this? So Bill goes, and don't forget, the Super Bowl was 1 week after. There was no week in between.
I remember.
So Bill goes, all right, fellas, I'm taking a suitcase. I'm packing for 10 days. I don't know about you guys. You could pack for two or three, but I'm packing for 10. And he just put the suitcase out there, and the players loved it. Because what was he saying? He says, hey, I'm packing because I think we're going to win this game, and we're going to Tampa, which is exactly what happened.
He loved it. You know, when he was a favorite, he never would talk about his team. When he was an underdog, he sometimes would be open about their chances. He was confident they would beat the Niners, but he knew how good they were. And they got a couple of turnovers late, including that one with Eric Howard and LT. But the Bills game all week, he was so confident. I was in the room Saturday morning with Earhart and him and sitting around, and he was so confident he was going to win. I never saw him more confident before a game than he was, because they knew they could run the ball on him, and that was their game plan, and they really thought they were going to out-physical him. And let's be honest, that was a great Bills team. It beat the Raiders 51-3, had all those weapons, but he was very incredibly confident that whole week. And, you know, the amazing thing was that week, how overconfident the Niners were, and I know you remember this, I've told the fans this, we were in the press box watching the game, right next to Wellington and George when the Giants won. We took a plane that night overnight to Tampa, And when we got there, when the Niners had already put their staff and their equipment in the NFC headquarters, and the Giants people had to wait for them to take the stuff out on Monday morning, and they stood there with smirks on their faces that the Niners staff had to take all their equipment out because they had already put their equipment beforehand in the building. They were so sure they were going to beat the Giants.
Yeah. It was that was really something. I remember that was the three-peat. They were going for the three-peat.
Oh, yeah, and they were a great team, no question.
Yep,
and
they were tremendous. They had it all going.
Yeah, it's amazing, as you mentioned, we're talking about Bob Glover, how many Super Bowls those three guys and how much those three guys dominated and how many times they met. And, you know, it was one of them winning a Super Bowl. You're talking about multiple Super Bowls for all three of them, three and two for the three guys. I mean, that's in the same decade, that's an they dominated the whole decade.
They did. And I remember talking to Gibbs, and we talked several times for the book. And in one of the conversations, he says, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about Walsh and Parcells, at the same time, because if it weren't for those guys, I'd have probably won two or three more Super Bowls.
Sure.
And, you know, Gibbs was not a boast. It was not boasting. He just felt that was true because those guys were so good. They just kept taking turns going to and winning Super Bowls. And, you know, the NFC was just killing the AFC at that time. And those three guys just collectively dominated an era that, Mike, I think was some of the best football that we've ever seen.
It is. The blind side comes out of there. Also, the West Coast offense, which, I'm not sure, but you gave credit to Bill for calling it that the first time. I don't know if that's true or not. I have no idea, but you might be right.
He
didn't like that offense, as you know. He was a little derogatory towards that offense.
There
was an edginess there was great respect between him and Gibbs. There was a little edginess between him and Walsh.
There really was. Yes. And there was a story, one of the funniest things, and Bill is, we meet up in Saratoga, this was a couple of years ago, for the book, and he says, hey, let me tell you this story about Walsh, okay? So the Giants beat the 49ers in the 1985 wild card playoffs. During that game, Walsh had the headset, he had a headset problem, and he had to turn them off. Bill Parcells had to turn his headsets off. And Bill Parcells made a note of it. And he thinks that it was done on purpose. So the next year they meet in the divisional round and they're at Giant Stadium. They're talking before the game. And you know, Parcells loves to just chat it up with the coach before the game. He goes to Walsh. He says, listen, you try that stuff with the headsets this time. I'm reporting you. And Walsh looks at him like, what are you talking about? He says, hey, I'm telling you, I know what you did, and if you do it again, I'm turning you in. And he said a few curse words. So Walsh turns to him and says, it's just a little gamesmanship. And he winks at him, and they start cracking up. So what happened there, Mike, was that Walsh got more he gave Parcells much more respect at that time, and Bill Parcells felt he earned the respect of Walsh because what happens there? Parcells knows that Walsh played some shenanigans with him, and he called him on it, but he never turned him in. He never did tattle on that. He didn't say that story until years later. And Bill Parcells told me that, he says, Bill Walsh really gained more respect for me than we kind of respected each other. It was a tremendous competition, and there was definite jealousy, especially on Bill Parcells' part, because of that West Coast offense, the genius label. Bill Parcells, he's the Jersey bully. He's going to punch you in the face, play, smash mouth football, and you got to stop it. And Walsh had this reputation. Oh, he's the smartest innovator in football. And Bill Parcells got the best of Bill Walsh during their meetings together. I believe he was 3-1 playoff wise against teams that were either coached by Walsh or the team inherited by George Seifert. And Bill Parcells got the better of him, and he got the better of Joe Gibbs as well in that playoff year, in the championship game.
And he owned Gibbs. I mean, it's amazing. And he had great respect for Gibbs. I mean, he told me a thousand times how good a coach he thought Gibbs was. And I said, yeah, that's because you beat him all the time. And it's funny, he had trouble with the Buddy Ryan teams. He had trouble.
That's right.
He had a lot of trouble playing though, that, you know, Reggie White used to play, you know, that diamond look and drive him crazy. And, I mean, they had a lot of trouble blocking those Eagles, and they had a lot of trouble with those guys. But he owned Washington. It's amazing how they beat him the close games. He used to say to me, the best thing in the world is to go to Washington and win a late game and listen to the silence in the building.
Yep.
He says that's, like, the greatest thing to do. He loved going to Washington. And, you know, in those days, remember how great the – people have no idea now how important the Washington franchise was. I mean, they don't see that now, but the Washington franchise was a big deal for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And it was because of Joe Gibbs. He built that team up. He and Bobby Bethard, they became champions. There's no feeling like sitting in the press box at RFK Stadium and the Redskins score a touchdown. That press box shakes because people are just jumping up and down in the stands. You're hearing the band play Hail to the Redskins. It was a magical atmosphere that you just don't get. And you don't have the rivalries now that you used to, only because there's free agency. You have great games each year, and there are great rivalries within a year, but there are not long-standing, years-long rivalries anymore in the NFL. It's just the way it is because the talent pool is much more evened out. Back then, back then, you know, Giants, Redskins, Giants, 49ers, Giants, Eagles, Giants, it was incredible.
And yeah, throw in some games against the Bears, and you got the four of them. Yeah, because the Bears were in the middle of that too for a while. So absolutely, I mean, I remember going a couple of years in a row to the Niners beating the Bears out there in San Francisco in '84. Then the Bears beating the Giants in '85. The Giants beating the Redskins in '86. I mean, year after year. I mean, was one to the other to the other. What made you? What was the first idea? What made you think of doing a book about the three guys?
Well, Mike, I started back then. My first job in football was covering Bill Parcells starting in 1985. I loved that era, and I just kind of looked back on it and working with a book publisher, this guy named Sean Desmond, really, really good guy at Grand Central Publishing, very helpful, and kind of put together this idea of including the three of them, kind of looking at the 80s within the context of those three, not just one at a time, but all three together. And, you know, he says, hey, I like that. You know, it's just different. And when I sent it to Parcells, he called me a couple of days after he got it. And he says, you know, I really like the book. I had no idea what was going through the minds of those two guys. I knew what I was going through. But, man, I just had no idea what they were going through. All I'm trying to do is beat them. And he just found it interesting that, you know, Walsh and Gibbs had their own things that were going on. And it was a very intense time, both professionally and personally, for all three of them. And, you know, they all burned out. They all never coached more than, well, Gibbs made it 11 years. Walsh had to walk away after 10, and then Parcells made it through, what, 8 with the Giants, and then kept coaching. But these guys put so much into it. They put their entire lives and their entire spirits into it, and they wore out.
That's what makes Belichick special is that he's able to do this year after year after year. I mean, that's the thing. And with the same team and just do it. You see these guys and Bill used to say the 10 years with a team was an eternity. I mean, he spent 8 with the Giants the first time, never came close to that again. But, I mean, how long he has stayed there is the remarkable thing. That's the thing. And maybe it's the connection to Brady. Maybe it's Kraft you give the compliment to, but whatever has kept him there and kept him sane all those years is a great influence. I don't know what it is. I'm not close to him at all, so I have no idea. But whatever it is, that's the thing that I point to as being the thing I respect the most, is just the ability to stay renewed and to be there and accept that challenge year after year after year and to just keep doing it. I mean, that's the amazing thing.
I saw Belichick after the preseason game against the Giants last August, and we just chatted a little bit afterward. Vinny Trani, another writer, and I guess another George Young guy, right, Vinny?
No, he was a Bill guy, I'd say.
Oh, he was a Bill guy. He was both. No, he was both.
He was really close to Bill, too, I'd say.
Anyway,
too,
but we're talking to Belichick, and I go to Bill. Now, I go back to Belichick when he's this no-name assistant coach with the Giants, and he's walking around. You know, you go up to him in the locker room, hey, Bill, what happened on this play?
Yeah, with his bad haircut.
A bad haircut, you know, the Bee Gees haircut. Yep. And then he diagrammed plays on your notebook. He was great. You know, knew him personally. You know, always asked how your family was doing. And then I see him after the game, and I go, Bill, who's going to outlast who here, you or me? He goes, I don't know, probably you. But he says, there's not many of us left. And I thought about that. He's right. You know, there's just not many people that go back. And this guy has coached over 40 consecutive years.
Amazing.
And it's a meat grinder for coaches. But I think his ability to kind of, you know, he has this dour personality, right? His reputation of just being no pulse.
Doom.
But that's doom. That's right. Doom. But that's helped him because it just keeps him, you know, solid. And he doesn't have that ups and downs.
I think the other thing he does, which is really smart, which he's always done, is he surrounds himself with really smart young guys. And he's always done that. He's handpicked them. He's had them forever. He's picked a million of them. And he puts a lot of really bright young guys around himself, which is smart. And a lot of guys, coaches, don't do that. I mean, but he did that. And so he was always that way. Plus, I think he's been innovative. You know, he reminds me of Krzyzewski, and the same way in that they've been able to renew themselves and modernize themselves. And I give him great credit for that. I really think that's an amazing achievement, that their longevity is an incredible, incredible achievement. It really is. It's fascinating. It really is. Because these three guys who you mentioned who had so much success, they did all burn out. There's no question. They absolutely did. They had to get out of the game. There's no question.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yes, I find it amazing, too, Mike.
It's a very interesting book. It really is. I tell everyone, if you want to learn that something about, and now as the Giants go through this woeful era, if you want to go back to a really great era for the NFL, and one that has a lot of tentacles like Belichick and Sean Payton and guys like that into this era, you know, that's a good way to start with those three guys, and because they were really fascinating, successful coaches. They really were.
Yeah.
Well, listen, congratulations with the book. So is the book doing okay?
Yeah, it's doing okay.
Good.
It's doing okay. I appreciate you talking about it, and I'm glad you
like
it.
I only recommend it if I like it, and I read it. I bought it. I actually bought it. So how about that? I actually paid for it. So because usually I get the book sent to me. This one I bought at Christmas time. I don't usually buy sports books, but I saw it I had not heard about it. No one had pitched it to me. No one had said, I got this. You know, usually they call me and say, I got this book I got to send you. You got to read it. You got to read it. And I'll say, okay, send it over. You know, and if I like it, and, you know, I'll wait for certain guys to send the biography. You know, if Mariner sends a biography, you know it's going to be good or something like that. Or Feinstein, you know, if he's got one that interests me, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But if he does, it's always good. But the point is, you know, and I'll read it. But this one, I got it off the shelf. I read it, and it was very interesting. And listen, I can only vouch for a lot of the Parcells stuff, but everything in it you wrote about was absolutely true. So, I mean, if the reporting's as good as it is on the other two guys, then there's a lot of very interesting stuff in there. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike, very much.
Well, it's true. So good luck with it. And who do you like in the playoffs? Go ahead. Who do you think's going to – give me who you think's going to win it.
You know, I like the Chiefs to play the Saints in the Super Bowl, but I'm getting very nervous about the Chiefs playing the Colts. So I think
Colts,
it's wide open.
I tell you, the Colts, this game's going to be a classic game this weekend. It really is.
They push people around, Mike.
Yeah, they do push them around. They really did. They pushed Houston all over the building. And the Chiefs got a little bit of that. We got this haunted house deal going, which is scary. You know that? I'd love to see Andy win a Super Bowl. I like Andy a lot. I've known him forever. I'd love to see him win a Super Bowl in his career. I don't know if he's ever going to get a better shot. So, but boy, I agree with you. I think that's going to be a very tough game this week. Very tough.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Bob Glauber. The book is, what's the publisher again, Mons? Just one more time. Grand Central Publishing. Is that it? Okay, Grand Central Publishing. The book is called Guts and Genius. It's about basically the start, the ups and downs of the three coaches who so dominated the 80s, Walsh, Parcells, and Gibbs. And it's a fascinating book. It really is. And it was a fascinating time. And they had some great, great games. And, you know, we lived those games. Bob did, I did, you know, we went to all those games, Dog did, we went to all those games, we traveled with those teams, I mean, we were at those Super Bowls, we were at all those playoff games, I mean, you know, I mean, I was at 82, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, I'm not sure. But 82 through 87, I was at every NFC championship game and every Super Bowl. I was at the 90 Super Bowl with the Giants. I was at the 89 I was at the 90. I was at the 89 game with the Giants. Flipper Anderson, terrible game, worst game Bill ever coached, big game, and terrible loss to the Rams. And that team could have won the Super Bowl. Bill thought that team was going to win the Super Bowl in 89. Actually, thought it was better than the 90 team, and they lost the Flipper Anderson game. And 90 winning at all was at that. And I was at the championship game that year and the Super Bowl that year. That Super Bowl was a great run. Dog and I went together. We went to San Francisco. We went to San Francisco for the Monday night game. Then we went to San Francisco for the NFC title game. And then we took the all-nighter to Tampa and then did a Monday show. And I remember the station getting mad at Dog and I because Dog and I had had no sleep when we did the Monday show. And we got really goofy and stupid in the Monday show. We were in a building by ourselves. There was nobody there yet. We were the only station there. And Dog and I were exhausted. So we started doing really a stupid show. I don't know what we did, but the program director at the time was Mark Mason. And he yelled at us because he said, I send you guys down there and you do this stupid show. And but you know what? We were just like, we were so out of it. We couldn't even remember what we were doing the last couple of hours. We were so out of it because we had been in San Francisco all day Sunday, flown all night, and then got into Tampa like 7 o'clock in the morning because we had to stop in Cleveland on our way to Tampa. There was no directs from San Francisco to Tampa. So, I mean, it was crazy. So I remember him yelling at us about that Monday show. And we did a show from the Hyatt. Remember, there were no other shows there then. None. We did a show from the Hyatt starting on Monday. By Wednesday, we had some people watching us. By Friday, I'm telling you, we had, and anybody who's out in an audience that remembers, we had literally thousands of people watching us in the Hyatt to the point where they had a band. They had like this second, third floor bandstand and dance floor at the Hyatt. So they had figured, hey, we're going to get a good crowd of people. We're going to get a lot of people for the Super Bowl. We're going to put a band on so that we get people to sit and drink and dance. And they put the band on when Dog and I came on. The people started booing so loud that they sent the band home and brought in these big speakers so that the people could hear our show until we left the air that time. So that's how many New Yorkers were there watching the show and football people were watching the show. And it was packed on Friday, absolutely packed. And that's when Dog picked the 49-13 again with the Bills, picked the classic 49-13 prediction with the Bills were going to beat him. So it was funny. It was. But that was a wild time. It really was. And one of the great Super Bowls ever. So that's all linked into that. So I remember those times very well. We were with that team a great deal. And that was a tremendous Super Bowl. Really was. Back after this.